We're going to form a subcommittee of the subcommittee of the subcommittee this morning. I'm sorry, Representative Johnson was just here. I understand that Senator Winters will be excused today, and Representative Patridge will be down shortly. So, and I expect Senator Devlin along fairly shortly. With that, we carried over a work session on the Employment Relations Board from yesterday, and this subcommittee of the subcommittee has opened up specifically to get information back onto the record regarding the Employee Relations Board and some of the performance. When we left here yesterday, there was a list of three things that I absolutely wanted updated before we proceeded any further with this budget. Number one was the performance measures needed to be updated and amplified. Number two, we needed some realization relative to the realism as to the revenue projections, and then finally, before we go into any further budget notes, we needed to have some discussion on the increases that were anticipated in order to make this budget whole, in order to keep the position authority where we needed where the request was for the position authority within the Employment Relations Board. That being the case, this morning I met, I think it was between 6 and 7 sometime, a little before 7 as I recall, mm-hmm. with Legislative Fiscal Office Monica Brown, and we hadn't yet then received the information from the Employment Relations Board. Within the last 10 minutes, I've now received it here in my hand. I understand it did come in within the last 20 minutes or 30 minutes. So with that, maybe Mr. Steidler could come forward, and if you need to bring Ms. Thomas or anyone else with, so that we can get this on the record, we need to do that. Please proceed. And I'm going to go ahead and hand the gavel, Representative Johnson. If Mr. Steiner doesn't give you the correct information, the gavel doesn't need to hit right here.
Yes, sir.
I'm anxious about the information we're receiving. Excuse me.
Mr. Butler, Representative Johnson, when we left yesterday, my understanding from the directions that we got from the chair and the subcommittee was that they wanted information with respect to a number of things. First of all, they wanted information regarding the total number of cases that the board has or processes.
May I interrupt you, please? For the record, would you identify yourself?
For the record, my name is David Steidler. I'm the chairman of the Employment Relations Board.
Thank you. I apologize for interrupting you.
I was remiss in not identifying myself initially. So I've prepared, in response to the questions that we got, I've prepared this memorandum, which I believe has been distributed to the committee. The first part of the memorandum addresses the question from Chair Butler regarding the total number of cases. We were able to get case numbers back to 1996. Numbers prior to 1996 are probably not relevant for comparison because the law was changed substantially in 1995. And the total number of cases was affected by the changes that occurred in 1995. So what we have here indicates, I think, fairly consistent with what I expressed to Chair Butler yesterday, that the total number of cases is between 200 and 300 a year. I couldn't be more specific yesterday, but you can see that the average for the total number of cases is 274 per year. You can also see that there is some fluctuation year to year, and that there is one pattern that does hold true with respect to that fluctuation, and that is that there are a higher number of cases in odd-numbered years, and that is because more contracts are open for negotiation in odd-numbered years. Particularly, the state government contracts are almost all negotiated in odd-numbered years, and when there are more contracts open, that generates more work for the agency. The second part of the memorandum addresses Chair Butler's request for update to the performance measure numbers.
Uh, David, let me just ask a question. Yesterday, the comment was made that we were having between 200 and 300 cases per year. As I recall, Rita grabbed some information out of your most recent handbook, talked about 1999, that there were 359 cases. I do not see 359 cases here. Was that addressed?
Mr. Butler, no, it wasn't. And that number, as near as I can determine, that number must have been an error. The rest of the numbers that were that made up the part of that, the mediation cases, the trainings, the grievance mediations, those numbers all, I was able to correlate those numbers. I was not able to determine where the total number came from. I could not find in our records how that number was determined.
I guess the thing that really concerns me about that, David, is that the number that you took from the book yesterday, the detail absolutely added up. 229 grievance cases, 92 contract cases. I'm sorry, mediation cases, 229, 92 contract, 24 grievance, and 14 trainings, total 359. You're telling me the 359 doesn't hold water now.
Chair Butler, the number that we gave yesterday for that year of 359 included a total of 229 in the cases of in the category of ULP representations, referral appeals, and declaratory rulings.
Okay.
And that number is incorrect. That's the number that I was not able to confirm. That number would more correctly be, or what the number that I was able to confirm by reviewing the records was 165. I have the person who compiled the numbers that appeared in that report is no longer with the agency, and I was not able to find her work papers to determine how she arrived at that number, even though the other numbers that she listed or the other detailed numbers that were there were correct. So I really apologize for the discrepancy, and I really can't explain how it occurred.
Okay. Rita, did you have a comment that you want to make for the record?
Chair Butler, it's Rita Thomas. This is a document that was prepared for a LIRC conference by Esther Forrest, who was our office assistant. And all I can think of is she used the words 359 cases were managed by the board, and my thought is that perhaps she was going through a flow-through from prior cases and filed cases when she came up with that number. It doesn't make any sense to us when we really looked at what was filed. It does not make sense under the ULPs, but we're thinking that she might have, when she said managed, she meant cases worked on from prior years.
Was this the office manager? Do we know? Is that what we were dealing with?
Yes, and she retired last year. And
okay.
So all right. I'm sorry about giving you that, but I'm thinking the terminology she used perhaps came up with that ULP number.
It's difficult to receive one number and have all of the detail and make sure the detail is all accurate, and then come back and say, oh, by the way, the total number was not accurate to start with. Then it immediately brings suspicion on the detail information. So let's proceed. I just wanted to verify where the numbers were coming from, because I can't. But they still are between 200 and 300 cases based upon the information, the total case that you provided today. Please proceed.
Mr. Butler, the next number that we were requested, or set of numbers we were requested to provide, was an update to the performance measure numbers, and I provided that the 2002 number for performance measure 1, the average number of days to process all union representation related positions petitions is 96. The updated 2002 number for measure 2, the average number of days between the close of the record and the issuance of a recommended decision, 63. For Measure 3, the average number of days between oral argument on appeal from recommended decision and issuance of a final order is 54. And Number 4, the average number of days between case filing and final order was 132. Measure 5, the percentage of collective bargaining disputes involving strike-permitted employees resolved prior to strike or unilateral implementation is 96. And Measure 6, the percentage of collective bargaining disputes involving strike-prohibited employees resolved prior to interest arbitration is 44%. Those last three numbers, I would say, I would have these comments, which I've included in the memorandum. The number of 132 days between case filing and final order is very low. It's actually very good performance, and it's a performance that I'm proud of, but I'm not sure that it realistically reflects. I wish we had more years of data that we could compare this with, because I'm not sure that 2002 was a realistic year in terms of measuring this particular piece of the agency's performance. The reason for that is in 2002 we had an unusually large volume of expedited cases, and expedited cases are those in which the normal procedures are bypassed. The board typically hears the case directly because of the urgency of the matter, for example, in a strike situation. Rather than assigning the case to an administrative law judge, the board will conduct the hearing.
Is that expedited case fashion still available to us and still open today?
Chair Butler, the board rules do provide for expedited processing of certain cases. We prioritize cases, and there are certain categories of cases which sort of automatically qualify for expedited processing. The vast majority of cases don't fall into that category, but there are categories of cases. For example, as I indicated, when a strike is going on, that's a matter of some urgency. We can't afford to wait through the process of having an administrative law judge conduct a hearing and issue a recommended decision and then wait to have objections filed for that, and so that the board can hear an appeal. We deal with those matters directly.
Looks like to me where that's about a 60% reduction in total number of days, but that expedited method is something that where it is part of your rule right now, it looks like it's something that could be beneficial. Are you using expedited case hearings at this time?
Chair Butler, we do use expedited processing of cases where the particular case falls within the rules that provide for expedited processing, where the parties request expedited processing in certain cases, or where our caseload allows us to do so.
Okay.
The other two numbers with respect to the percentage of disputes resolved in mediation, the first number, with respect to both numbers, I should just point out that those numbers are subject to change because in this process there are still a lot of 2002 cases that are open. They are not resolved yet, and I would expect that, especially with concerning measure number 6, that percentage will go up somewhere close to its historical number of around 80%, 85% once those cases, the 10 cases that are pending, get closed out. In response to Representative Patridge's request to reword the performance measures, I have in my memorandum included suggested rewording. I note for the subcommittee that these suggestions have not been reviewed by the Progress Review Board, so I don't know if they're going to be or would be acceptable to them. I had originally drafted these in English and was directed by the Progress Review Board to change them to the format that they appear in, so I'm now trying to revert back to English, and I don't know if I've done a good job or not.
Representative Patrick, you'll take note of that when we discuss the Review Board the Progress Board.
Well, I don't claim to be an English expert, but...
And to further clarify so that they're to make it clear what it is that the board does and what it is that these performance measures are intended to measure, I've included, after the suggested redrafts, I've included several paragraphs of explanation, which hopefully will help the subcommittee get a grasp on what it is that these performance measures are trying to address. That brings us to the question of the revenue estimates. I have provided the subcommittee with a copy of the revenue estimate work papers that the state conciliator worked up for the mediation fee parts of our revenue component. I believe that the sales estimates and the unfair labor practice filing fee estimates are realistic. I think they're defensible. They may be a bit optimistic, but I don't think that they're far off the mark when you look at the actuals for 2002. I concede, because there's no other way around it, that the revenue estimates for the mediation component that appear in the governor's budget are probably unduly optimistic.
Okay, the concern I have there, David, is that by the time we add up, you know, a little bit, using your estimates and using the projections through the end of this current fiscal biennium, that it appears that the agency's estimate of $48,000 for the licenses and fees will be closer to $43,000. That's approximately a 10% reduction there. That with regard to charges for services will be closer to $180,000 as opposed to $205,000. That's slightly in excess of a 10% reduction there. And that the sales income will be closer to $13,000 as opposed to the $15,000. That's down in excess of 10% there. And then the problem I've got is that the numbers that we have estimated for the 2001-2003, the governor has rolled up for 2003-2005 as opposed to, in certain instances, some he's taken straight across. But the actual underlying documents providing for the, for instance, the charges for services, as opposed to being as high as $180,000, which is what we're projecting, as opposed to the $205,000 at this point, goes down to $178,000 for the next biennium. My concern is that these numbers continue to be overly optimistic, and that we're going to find ourselves short at the end of this biennium, based upon what I am seeing. Even from the January 23rd and the projections through this final quarter of this year, the final 3 months, can you help us to find out why the governor would roll up numbers that will fall short for this current biennium?
Chair Butler, I'm not sure that I exactly understand what you mean by roll up.
Okay, the governor has. For instance, has taken a $48,000 estimated fees for the current biennium, which we now know to be about $43,000, and has rolled those up to $51,000. So we're going to fall short this biennium, and then with regard to the service charges of $205,000, the $205,000 has carried forward. First of all, we'll be short by $25,000 from the $205,000. But then the estimate really is closer to 178. I guess my concern is that with regard to the total amounts of fees that we are anticipating, we're really going to be short by between 10 and 15% on the fees, and yet the agency is rolling up to anticipate the greater amount of fees. That is of concern to me, David.
Chair Butler, I believe that the fees, if we take it in the component categories, what we're projecting, the most updated figures that we had for, and we have provided updated revenue requests or revenue projections to Monica Brown, we projected $13,200 in the category of sales. I believe that the projection of $15,000 for the 2003-2005 biennium is not unrealistic, just as although the actuals for 2001-2003 in the unfair labor practice filing fee category is going to be about somewhere between $43,000 and $43,000, I don't think it's unrealistic to expect $48,000 in filing fee income in the next biennium. I think that the governor's, and we've suggested to Monica Brown that the $51,000 projection that appears in the governor's budget is unduly optimistic, that $48,000 would be a better projection based on the typical rise in the number of unfair labor practice complaints that we expect to see from one year to the next.
That's on the 51,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the largest number, if we could. Let's talk about the, assuming we can move that from 43 up to 51 for the next biennium, let's talk about the 205,000 for the charges for fees. Right now, we're on a collision course for about 172,000 to 180, if we're optimistic. You feel like that should go to the 205, particularly where it's been averaging at well under 200,000. 9901 was under 160,000. We will go to 180,000. My concern is, are we going to really project that and meet that projection?
Chair Butler, it would be my view that the $205,000 as a projection of revenue for mediation fee income that appears in the governor's budget is probably unduly optimistic.
Okay.
That a more realistic number, I believe that 180,000 is too low. A more realistic number based on the typical growth in cases in the area would probably be between 190 and 195,000.
And looking at Wendy's estimates, Wendy Greenwald from earlier this session, she estimated that the total estimated conciliation service 2003-2005 per her list of assumptions, two or three pages of assumptions, would be really closer to about 178.5.
Chair Butler, she indicates also in there, given all my copies of it away,
okay.
She indicates, she does indicate in the note at the end of the first section there that the requests for mediation have increased an average of 6.5 cases a year, and that this would result in approximately 147 contract mediation requests in 2003-2005, and that would increase the total revenues to 195.5.
Okay. So that still falls short, but it doesn't fall quite as short as what we're anticipating based upon Wendy's original calculations.
That's correct.
Okay. Representative Patridge, have you had just a brief opportunity to look at the performance measures, the English performance measures, English version?
I have, Mr. Chair. I like them much better. I can tell you that. I just had one question on them.
Please, Representative Patridge.
Number on page 2, number 4. I just wasn't clear on it's clarified. The average length of time and days it takes for the agency to process all cases involving a hearing from case filing to final order.
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge.
I just wondered why you limited it to involving a hearing.
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, that is what we're trying to measure, is the total length of time it takes for the agency to process a case in which we have a hearing. Maybe there's a better
way. In which you have a hearing or which a hearing is entitled, in which they're entitled to a hearing. I guess there's usually not a final order issued unless you have a hearing.
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, that's correct. So this would be cases in which a hearing is held.
But I'm just wondering, I guess I'm interested to know, to some degree, how long it takes from when each of your types of cases hit the front door to when they're resolved. To me, not just those cases that are limited to a case hearing. I mean, case hearing, I think, is one subset of the overall number of cases that, you know, you come in the door, and I guess does number one cover the rest of the types of issues? I mean, but that's just processing. That's what I'm asking. You know, if something comes in the front end and it's resolved, no matter how it's resolved, I'm looking for the length of time to the various. You know what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying?
Representative Patridge, I believe I do. Number one would not address
right.
that because it deals with a very limited subset of the kind of cases that the agency deals with. The number four was intended to address those cases that are with, I guess what you'd call full processing from the agency.
Right.
They go through the entire agency process from, you know, everything we've got from start to finish. And what we were trying to measure is how well we do that and how quickly we can do that. We could have additional measures to measure each component of each component type of case and include within those measures cases that are disposed of, for example, by dismissal order without a hearing, or cases that are withdrawn by the parties prior to the hearing, or perhaps even after a recommended order is issued. And we could certainly expand this to include other performance measures.
I guess I'm happy with what you have here, but I'd like to have it in the budget report, Monica.
Okay.
If we can just say we'd like the agency to come back to the next legislative session looking at the length of time to process all the types of resolutions that they have. That way we're looking at it, but we're, you know, I don't want to sit here and try and change performance measures based upon what you've got, if that makes
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, that would be a relatively, if, as long as we know we're going to be doing it for you for the next 2 years, that would be a relatively easy matter to keep track of as
yeah,
we go along.
And I think we've asked, at least I've made the suggestion, or I think Representative Butler and we've talked to some of the co-chairs about during the interim kind of helping to create a template of reports by agency that the legislature can then use to help manage or at least have knowledge about what's going on in the system from our financial management point of view. Some will be obviously across many agencies, but a lot of them like this would be very specific to what you provide.
Thank you, Representative Patridge. David, other information, I think we've gotten through your memorandum that has been provided here. We get to the okay.
Thank you.
Anything further that you've got for the good of the cause? We're still not in any kind of work session, and Senator Devlin has stepped away. He had to run up to his office for just a moment.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. The one thing that I didn't address, which is included in the last paragraph of the memorandum, is a suggestion or request of the subcommittee that if you are feeling not very good about some of those resident estimates, and there's reason for that, as we've already discussed, that we would request that rather than eliminate the office specialist 2 position, that you simply unfund it, and with directions to or with an amendment to the budget note that if the agency can demonstrate after a suitable period of time in the next biennium that its revenue projections are in fact accurate and that the position is supportable, that we could approach the e-board for having the position restored.
But the e-board could restore a position as well as the funding.
We would prefer that the position be preserved and that it would just be a question of having the funding restored, just because of the difficulty that we've experienced in the past of having positions created. I know the emergency board can do that, but getting funding back it seems to me, if you can demonstrate that you have the revenue to do it, is a whole lot simpler task than convincing them that they need to create a new position, which there seems to be some reluctance to do.
I am reluctant as well, because part of the charge is that when we do have these kinds of vacancies, and I recognize this is a short-term vacancy because of the movement by the one employee who was the office specialist up into the office manager's position. So, but the office manager's position having been vacant for 10 months is of additional concern in the process as we go in and take a look at the duration of the vacancies that are being demonstrated.
Well, Mr. Chair, in that regard, I would point out to the subcommittee that the reason that the position was vacant for 10 months is that we had to leave it vacant because we needed the vacancy savings for special session cuts from the previous year. If we had not had to have vacancy savings, I would have filled the position as soon after the previous incumbent left as it was possible. As soon as we would have paid out her accumulated vacation and I could have filled it, I would have filled it that soon.
It would have been February of 2002, in effect.
Is that if that's how long it took to pay her off? Yeah.
Okay. Monica, you have your list of recommendations for us today, and I recognize this will be for work session, but we're still just in public hearing. Maybe we'd better go ahead and go through this list of recommendations as it relates to where we're at.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, in reviewing the agency's response that we received this morning, in the brief review that I had of that, did not see any compelling new information on the revenue estimates, so my recommendation is to continue forward with the LFO projection that is in our recommendation. And I believe LFO was also asked to go out and do some additional review of administrative law proceedings to see if we could find some comparables. So let's review that piece of the memo first. I was able to contact the Central Hearings Panel to get a comparison to the Workers' Comp Division cases. They do insurance cases and medical cases for that agency. They are not keeping all of the incremental statistics on the entire administrative law process, but we're able to fill in some of the blanks of the number of administrative law judges as well as the number of cases that they have per year. And those cases were running at least 110 to 154 days to completion. The Bureau of Labor and Industries also has two administrative law judges that they noted that there are no support staff for those judges as well. They do all of their administrative support and legal research. They have about 100 to 150 cases a year that 50 go to hearing, and you can see their information there that their cases range from 283 days to 305 days to completion.
Do we know if they have this expedited hearing process available to them?
I did not ask that question, okay. Mr. Chair.
That's been an intriguing item to me because it's certainly, I mean, it's a 60% reduction in number of days to completion. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So to the extent, Mr. Chair, that information is valuable or comparable to the new information from the agency, the committee has that for their review. And finally, LFO is continuing to recommend or continue with its recommendations from yesterday. Again, without additional information to say that the revenues are significantly going to increase, we think that the LFO recommendation presents a balanced budget within existing resources. We are proposing an additional budget note that indicates, I think, very similarly to what the agency was suggesting, that should their revenues come in or should their caseload increase or the timelines become exasperated, that they can return to the emergency board and seek additional limitation and discuss funding. To address the agency's request to keep the position and unfund it, LFO would recommend, since in continuing with the recommendation to eliminate the administrative law judge as well as the receptionist position, that if additional funding becomes available, the Ways and Means and or the emergency board, if it's during the interim, might want to have the conversation of which position is most appropriate to add back, what resources would be coming back if additional resources were available. So that budget note is there for your review as well.
Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson.
So, Mike, let me be sure I understand this. You would keep the clerical position just unfunded?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, no, I would not recommend that.
But you would have an ALJ, which would be unfunded, and then the discussion would be that if the resources come back to go ahead and fund an ALJ, the administrative law judge, then the question would be, is that the appropriate position to fill, or should we create the support staff at that particular point? Is that my understanding?
Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification. LFO's recommendation, subcommittee can do it as they will, is to eliminate both positions, and position authority can be reestablished by the emergency board.
Okay.
And can determine at that point which is the appropriate resource to add.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking at this, I was surprised by one thing, actually, because what I assumed was the basis for funding this agency wasn't in reality what it was. And I hadn't looked closely enough. And I do have some clear concerns about the impact in terms of timeline. But I think the reality is, in talking to both the chair and the Senate co-chair, is that at this point the intent will be to move the budget. But when I just thought about this just straightforwardly, I said, well, this is funded by general funds and it's funded by an assessment, without looking at too much of the detail, to be honest. And I thought the assessment was on local government and the general funds were for the state. And it turns out that the assessment is on state governments and the general funds is largely to pay for the cost of serving local governments. Which to me, I mean, I'm not objecting to that, but I mean, it's another example of a service being provided by the states to local governments. And I was wondering yesterday why there were no cities or counties here objecting to potential delays. And I talked to some of them yesterday, and I still see no cities or counties here objecting to delays. I'm sure that this has been the history of how the board is funded, but I just wanted to note that my perception of how it was funded is totally different from what the reality is.
Thank you very much, Senator. Colleagues, we've received the recommendation, and we're not in work session. We're just in a public hearing of a subcommittee. And I've just received word that Senator Schrader won't be back and available to us until we're ready to work all three budgets that we're working today. So with this, we're going to go ahead and move forward to our second budget. Thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing portion of Senate Bill 5519, and we're going to go ahead and move forward. Thank you. Thank you, Monica.
Thanks.
And stand by, Monica, if you would, please, as we continue to move forward. Paul Seaborn is here, and we're going to continue on then with a subcommittee of the subcommittee as we hear the recommendations from Legislative Fiscal related to the Oregon Racing Commission. This is Senate Bill 5540.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You do have before you Senate Bill 5540, the budget bill for the Oregon Racing Commission. You should have at your places two pieces of information. One is a memo with my recommendations. The other is the spreadsheet that will detail the changes to the budget. Well, I'll go through these. Evidently, we're just going to go through the public hearing portion of this. So I'll go through the first part, which is the performance measures. And for the performance measures, the LFO is recommending approval of the performance measures as submitted by the agency, but with the understanding that the commission will work with the Department of Administrative Services during the interim to incorporate to the greatest extent possible the suggested changes contained in the DAS performance measure review. While there wasn't a lot of discussion on the performance measures in sub, when I was reviewing the information provided by the Performance Measure Review Committee, I noticed that there were a number of changes they had suggested, mostly just wording changes that would make the measures more easily readable for the layperson who didn't have an intimate knowledge of the commission. So that's why the recommendation you see before you.
Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. Reggie Patrick. I think most of the performance measures are, I guess, okay, but I don't think the commission necessarily has control over, many of these performance measures, like provide for a humane environment for racing animals by the total number of greyhounds adopted per number of Oregonian, per Oregon bred greyhounds. I mean, that's not, in my opinion, a performance measure that the Racing Commission can help on safety issues and make sure things are done, but to me that's making a broad-based policy statement about whether that's humane or inhumane, and so I guess I have problems with performance measures that aren't objective and financial in terms of this particular piece. I understand it's an issue for some people, but
I don't think the performance measures for an agency are necessarily the right way and manner.
8 out of the 10 animals interviewed had absolutely no complaints.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I believe that it is trying to address a concern that arises around the greyhound racing industry. And I do not know personally if the department in any or the commission in any way has a program for adopting, if they fund any program for adopting, or what their involvement is in the adoption of greyhounds. But if they had some involvement in that process, perhaps it wouldn't be such a bad measure. If they don't...
Well, I don't think it's a... I think it's a goal that they can have as part of a work plan, I guess. You know, we have allowed greyhound racing in the state of Oregon. It's a state policy. The number of greyhounds adopted does not say whether it's, you know, the Oregon greyhounds, whether it's humane or inhumane, in my opinion. So I guess I would object to that particular policy. You know, I think we're trying to make a political statement out of these rules. So that's just my comment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Johnson?
Following on that line, it's been so long since we've seen the budget, I don't remember. The board, I don't think, has... or maybe they do, I just don't know, an active adoption program that the board is in control of?
I don't recall that they had any of those kinds of issues that were that they were in control of any kind of an adoption program themselves. We have.
My point is, as the folks come forward, if the performance measures, I agree with Representative Patridge that the performance measures really ought to reflect those things that the commission and the agency have the ability to control or manipulate to a positive or a not positive outcome. And if they're not running the adoption program.
Jody, do you have a response to that? You're running an adoption program this week?
Representative Butler, Chair Butler, and Representative Johnson, Jody Hansen, Executive Director of the Racing Commission, for the record. The commission does not actually run the adoption program. The adoption program is a three-part program that's outside of the commission's jurisdiction, but as far as what happens with the program, but it's part of the... part of our regulations is that we protect the welfare and safety of these dogs, and so that's just kind of a side.
But on the track, you have the ability to control behavior towards those dogs and whether or not the kennels are clean or whatever. I don't know anything about it, so I'm making this up as I go along. But as far as how many people step forward to adopt, whether or not your advertising is sufficient, whether you're advertising in the right vehicles to attract the right loving adoptive homes for greyhounds, that's all, I think, if you're not running a racing program, well beyond your ability to control. So I agree with Representative Patridge. To the degree that you can say you'll have a humane environment at the track, which you have authority over, that's hunky-dory. But to somehow make the point that you can be responsible for activities outside of your sphere of control, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, perhaps the solution would be, because I agree that they don't have a direct control over the outcome or the change in this measure, oftentimes when you have a measure like that, you can make it a high-level outcome measure, something they track, they're interested in following, but not something upon which you base their performance.
But I don't even want them to spend the time tracking the data. I just don't think it's within their purview to track the data. Jeff Gilmore came up, who's on the commission. Jeff?
Yes. Jeff Gilmore, member of the Racing Commission. While I'm not here on an argumentary point with you, I should point out that we do license kennels. Mm-hmm. We do license owners, and we do take care of the necessities that go on. The Racing Commission does support the adoption program, but does not control the adoption program.
Okay. I just have an issue with it. So, I mean, why don't we go on and listen to Paul's issue we're not going to work with.
That's essentially all I have for the performance measures. If there's nothing else, we can go come back to that maybe when we're in work session on the recommendation for performance measures. The next section of recommendations have to do with adjustments to the governor's balanced budget. The first group of which are standard adjustments, of which you've been seeing some. LFO adjustment package 001 is the employee compensation freeze. This is an adjustment, a reduction of $133,147 other funds. This is to implement the merit freeze and the backing out the cost of living adjustments for budget calculations for positions after July 1, 2003. LFO adjustment package 002 is the vacant position adjustment. LFO is not recommending any elimination of vacant positions. The commission currently has one position vacant, is my understanding. That person who was in that position retired not long ago and was hired back part-time to fill the position because of his experience, and they did not want to lose the experience of the person filling the position. So LFO is not recommending that position be eliminated. C is LFO adjustment package 003, attorney general rate adjustments. This is a standard adjustment to implement the rate reduction from $109 per hour to $98 per hour for the attorney general's fees. D is LFO adjustment package 004, the DAS assessment adjustments. Again, these are standard adjustments based on reductions in the DAS budget. E is LFO adjustment package 005, that's to reduce the inflation allowance. I recommend eliminating inflation in all but the four categories you see listed here: telecommunications, which is adjusted by the DAS assessment, state government service charges, which is also adjusted by the DAS assessment, attorney general, which was adjusted by LFO package adjustment package 003, and then facilities rental, because commissions or any agency has little control over what the rent is. And that is for the section on standard adjustments. If there's any question on those standard adjustments, if not, I'll move on to the policy packages and other adjustments. F is package 090, and this is a program reduction. In the governor's balanced budget, there was a $25,000 reduction to services and supplies. Looking at the expenditure history and the 9901 actuals and then the 0103 projected expenditures on services and supplies, LFO is recommending to increasing this reduction by $50,000 for a total reduction of $75,000. We also have discussed this reduction with the commission. They don't feel that this will be very difficult to do in services supplies. In fact, this biennium they've gone into DAS for an allotment adjustment because they are spending less in services supplies, but they needed extra limitation to facilitate monies going out from the development fund so that they can make the full development fund costs. G is package 101, increased hub revenue. And this is a package that was in the governor's balanced budget to increase the special payments that would go along with an increased projection in hub revenue that the governor's balanced budget was projecting. If you look on the spreadsheet on page 3 of the spreadsheet that I passed out, you'll see that the total package would now be $823,333. That's an increase to the special payments portion of the budget. The LFO adjustment, again, there is in the center column, 278,667, and that's what you see reflected in this table. That is a direct function of increasing the assumed revenue from hubs from what was in the governor's balanced budget of $72,500 per month to $90,000 per month. We've reviewed the revenues coming in with the commission and with budget and management, and for the last year they have been between $90,000 and $100,000 and sometimes over $100,000 per month, so we felt it was sufficiently reasonable to raise it, the assumption, to $90,000 per month. I should also point out that commensurate with this increase in the development fund payouts would be an increase in the transfer to the general fund of $139,333 because of the monies that come from the hub revenue, which the state gets 0.25% of all the handle that the hubs generate. The portion that goes to the general fund is 1/3. The portion that goes to the development fund for the betterment of paramutual racing industry in Oregon is 2/3. So you have a shift of equal.
Paul, do we want to stop at any point in time, or do we want to go? Does the commission want us to go through them all and then hear any comments? What's the preference from the commission? Are you guys okay with the comments generally?
We're happy.
Okay.
I'll move on then to package LFO adjustment package 006, which is elimination of off-track monitor position. This position was created in 1990 to monitor two remote off-track betting operations. When off-track betting first began in Oregon, evidently, there were some problems with a couple locations outside of the Willamette Valley. And so the commission felt it important to have someone check up on those operations regularly. But as you can see, that was in 1990. They've had no problems for years in those locations. We would recommend that position be eliminated and that those operations be monitored in the same manner as all other off-track betting sites, which is periodic visits by an investigator. I is LFO Adjustment Package 007, eliminate the relief veterinarian and relief steward positions. This adjustment is truly a function of the detail that we're looking at positions this biennium. When we were reviewing the merit increases and the information we had, LFO noticed that there are a couple positions that were labeled as relief positions that were in the budget, in the regular budget, as two positions. When we discussed with the commission what these positions actually do, evidently if the veterinarian, the regular vet, needs some time off, they have a pool of people that they call upon and get the first person available to fill in. And the same as for the relief steward position. And discussing this with BAM and with the commission, it seemed that these would be better placed as professional services, in which you would put the person under contract for a year. A number of people could sign the contract. You have a pool of people you could call, and then you pay them. They're paid $200 a day, I believe, for the relief steward position and $300 a day for the relief veterinarian position. And LFO also believes that, based on conversations with the commission, that the amount budgeted for relief for these two positions was much higher than what is actually needed, except in extraordinary instances. Based on assuming that they would need 6 weeks relief for each position, we recommended that $15,000 of the personal services reduction be moved to professional services in the S&S line to reflect the payment from those lines. And I believe that we asked for some initial feedback from HRSD, and they didn't seem to have any real concerns with this change. The last LFO adjustment package is 008, which is the creation of an office specialist 1 position. The commission has, for a time, had a part-time person on staff through a temp agency to help in the office with day-to-day paperwork. Having reviewed with them the need and the ability to afford this position based on the reductions of the other positions we're recommending, LFO is recommending the creation of an office specialist 1 position. And that is all for the LFO recommended adjustments to the governor's balanced budget.
Do you want to go through the ending fund balance?
Absolutely. The other fund ending balance, you'll see a table that you probably won't see in other budgets, certainly not ones I work on, just because of the nature of this budget. By statute, any monies in excess of what the commission needs for operating are to be transferred to the general fund. And so I tried to lay out for you kind of step by step what was the puts and takes in the commission's budget. The first line you see is the revised beginning balance of $1,314,183. That is up from approximately $900,000 that was assumed in the governor's balanced budget. again, this is a function of having revenue higher from hubs, primarily higher than what was anticipated in the governor's. Yeah, this is another function of the $90,000 a month. So they've accumulated a higher beginning balance, which is the 0103 ending balance.
What's that get transfer called? Right,
they,
at the end, or
they have the ability to transfer that really at any time. They would most likely transfer some of this up front because they have some of this cash on hand. The other line is the LFO recommended ending balance of $500,000. I think the point is not as much when they transfer it, as that amount that's expected gets transferred eventually by the end of the biennium.
Or special session.
Or special session, yes. And I should also say that this $1.3 million ending balance includes $750,000 that was taken during one of the special sessions, special session two or three, I'm not sure. But you can see that the commission has, the economic outlook for the commission has changed markedly in the last few years.
Although my question is, and sorry to jump ahead,
sure.
So if they have $500,000 in there, the remaining amount doesn't start transferring out immediately like you're recommending?
No, okay. It doesn't have to.
Okay.
No, it doesn't have to. The second line is the total revenue. That's, again, the revised revenue estimate. That includes the $90,000 we were assuming per month. The total expenditures from the sheet. The LFO's recommended ending balance of $500,000, which is a little bit more than 3 months of the operating expenses of the commission, and then the amount expected to be transferred to the general fund. And so if you add the first two lines and subtract the next three lines, you get to an additional transfer to the general fund of $955,361.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Show us the money.
And probably the most important sentence in this, the most important sentence of this whole memo is the second sentence of the following paragraph that says that that this amount is $1,094,694 more than the transfer amount assumed in the governor's balanced budget. So that is how much will be transferred to the general fund in excess of what was anticipated. We also include, recommending including a budget note that will help budget and management and LFO track the revenue with the commission. All we're asking is that the commission provide quarterly financial reports to LFO and to BAM so that on expenditures and revenues. And if such time that there is an even higher jump in revenue, which we can always hope for, the commission could be directed to report to the emergency board in order to acknowledge some anticipated higher than anticipated transfer to the general fund. But primarily it's there just to ensure that the $90,000 a month revenue estimate isn't out of whack. There are a couple other changes in the commission's revenue stream that we would like to track over the course of the biennium. And with that, there's the last recommendation is a change to the appropriation bill.
Okay. We are not in work session. I think we're just going to recess this portion, go ahead and move on to House Bill 5001, Board of Accountancy's budget bill, and have a change of LFO analysts. Thank you.
Thanks. I don't care. It doesn't
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We're going to open a public hearing of the subcommittee on House Bill 5001.
Yeah, subcommittee of the subcommittee. Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Board of Accountancy presented its testimony, its performance measures at prior meeting in April. You have before you my recommendations, and they're fairly straightforward. These are to all the recommendations with respect to limitation for the board are to reduce it to reflect the inflation adjustment salary freeze, reduction in AG rate, and the reduction in the Department of Administrative Services assessments. they are in order to reduce the limitation by $20,388 for the inflation adjustment, taking inflation out of supplies and services, reducing the limitation by an additional $29,856 to recognize the impact of the extended salary freeze, a reduction in the AG rate to $98 an hour would reduce the limitation, or we are recommending a reduction of $8,701 for that effect, and also an additional reduction of $1,030 for the reduction in the Department of Administrative Services assessments. The net effect of this is to reduce the other funds limitation to a new amount of $1,597,976. For purposes of the budget report, we are recommending that the subcommittee acknowledge it has reviewed the agency's performance measures and pretty much is in agreement with them and encourage them to continue using them in their efforts and to refine them as they need to. If you remember, they were presented as part of their presentation in April. There were five different measures. The only other recommendation then is just an adjustment to the budget bill.
So any questions of LFO stat?
With your permission, I can chase down a senator.
That would be just lovely.
Okay.
Thank you. We will stand in recess while we hunt for a senator.
we've been in recess. We're going to call the. We're going to open the first work session on the Employment Relations Board, which is Senate Bill 5519. I think right now what we want to do probably is take a. I'm shuffling all the memos. Sorry. I think we've done this a little. This one's a little more confusing. Why don't we do the one change that we had was in the performance measures, Monica. So the chair would entertain a motion to modify the performance measures as presented by the Employment Relations Board in their memo of May 14th, 2003.
So moved.
To the committee.
To adopt the English version.
Senator Devlin moves to adopt the English version of the performance measures for the Employment Relations Board pursuant to the memo submitted to this committee today of May 14th, 2003.
Mr. Chair, did you want to add further clarification on your suggestion for timelines for all processes for cases, which is
I
not...
I think we were just going to do that as part of the budget report.
Okay.
So, without objection, that's so ordered. Now, in regards to the budget, because we've got two separate... memorandums. I think, Monica, if we move, the chair would entertain a motion to move the recommendation today in regard to Monica's memorandum dated May 14th, 2003, incorporating the May 13th, 2003 memorandum. I think that that's probably the easiest way to take this motion.
Mr. Chair.
So moved.
Yes, Monica.
For the clarification, we did not receive the House co-chair authorization for the third additional budget note prior to this meeting, so any approval of that would be contingent on that.
Okay. With that noted, Senator Devlin moves with the caveat that the third budget note has not yet been approved by the House co-chair. The memo of May 14th, 2003 recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office, also incorporating the May 13th, 2003 recommendation. Any objection? So ordered. So the chair would entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 5519 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Senator Devlin moves Senate Bill 5519 to the full committee, or as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Just for the record, during the work session, Senator Schrader was present, Senator Devlin, Representative Johnson, and Representative Caffer. We'll close the work session.
Carriers.
I don't think you want us to carry. I'll carry. Richard, do you want to carry? Richard, carry.
I'll
Senator Devlin, carry. You want to carry in full? You want me to carry in full?
Why don't you carry in full?
I'll carry full, too. Okay, so we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 5519. We're going to open the work session on Senate Bill 5540. The chair would entertain a motion to adopt the performance measures numbers 1, 3, 4, and 5.
So moved.
Representative Johnson moves the performance measures 1, 3, 4, and 5. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair would entertain a motion to adopt the LFO recommendation dated May 13, 2003 from Paul Siever to the committee in regards to the recommendation for Senate Bill 5540.
I move the LFO recommendation dated May 13th.
Representative Johnson moves the recommendation for Senate Bill 5540 on the May 13, 2003 memo. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. The chair would now entertain a motion to move to the full committee as amended Senate Bill 5540.
So moved.
Representative Johnson moves Senate Bill 5540 as amended by this committee to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. For the record, Senator Devlin, Senator Schrader, Representative Johnson, Representative Patrick were present. So we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 5540. We're going to open the carriers. Grayson Commission.
Senate Bill.
Senator Devlin. Senator Devlin at full. Bullitt.
You want to carry it or you want Butler to carry? He's not here. We'll make him do the work. Representative Butler.
Thanks, Paul. Open a work session on House Bill 5001, the Board of Accountants and Budget Bill. We have the LFO recommendation. The chair would entertain a motion to adopt the LFO recommendation dated May 13, 2003.
So moved. I presume that that includes the numerical changes on line 6, deleting 1,657. It's inclusive.
It's all inclusive.
It's so moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson moves the LFO recommendation in the memo dated May 13, 2003 by Dallas Wyland to the committee, including on line 6, to change the amount to $1,597,976. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. The chair would entertain a motion to move House Bill 5001 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 5001 as amended to full with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Johnson moves House Bill 5001 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. For the record, Senator Devlin, Senator Schrader, Representative Johnson, Representative Passage, we're here for the record. Carriers.
It's a House. I'll do it.
Representative Johnson will carry it full and on the House. Senator Devlin will carry in the Senate. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5001. Our work session on 5001, excuse me. Anything else for the good of the committee, Dallas?
No, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there's no meeting scheduled for tomorrow. Next week, Monday, will be Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And we tentatively scheduled, we'll get the schedule to you, but the Liquor Commission on Monday and Tuesday. I think we've scheduled government standards and practices on Friday. But I'll get the schedule for you.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for coming. And with that, the committee's adjourned.
Thank you.